Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Every once in a while, life hands us a moment that makes us stop and reconsider everything we thought we knew about our own story. Imagine reaching your 50s, believing you understood where you came from, who your family is, and the path your life has taken, only to discover that a piece of that story has been quietly hidden in plain sight for decades. Today's conversation explores what happens when that truth finally comes to light. Al discovered, almost by accident, that the story he believed about his origins wasn't the whole story. What followed was a journey through DNA testing, family secrets from another era, and a search that ultimately uncovered connections he never expected, including the remarkable story of a birth mother whose past held a surprising clue. It's a conversation about identity, family, and the way our understanding of ourselves can continue evolving even later in life. Listen now to my conversation with Al Isaacs. Today's conversation begins with a moment that would stop most of us in our tracks. At 52 years old, Al learned something about his life that completely changed the story he thought he knew. During a conversation with a doctor, he discovered, almost in passing, that he had been adopted. Not only that, but it had happened through the informal gray market adoption practices of the late 1960s, and everyone in his family had known except him. By the time the truth came out, both of his adoptive parents were living with dementia. So the people who might have filled in the missing pieces of the story were no longer able to fully do so. So he began searching. Through DNA testing, genealogy research, and some determined online detective work, he uncovered family connections he never knew existed, including a half-sister. And then an unexpected thread appeared. His birth mother, Mary Smith, yes, one of the most common names in the English-speaking world, had once been a folk singer in New York who had won a nationally televised singing competition. You know, I'm reading this, Al, and I'm getting goosebumps from your story. This is crazy. That discovery helped lead him to the truth where he came from. Al's memoir, Finding Mary Smith, is about uncovering identity later in life, making peace with family secrets, and discovering that our stories can echo across decades before they finally make sense. Al Isaacs, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey, and you must have done that too.
Thank you. Whether I wanted to or not, yes.
Yeah, no.
Absolutely. Thank you for having
Yeah, no. Let's go back to that moment. The
Sure.
oncologist sort of casually mentions your adoption. Did you realize what he was saying, or did that take a moment to land?
When they said it, I laughed. Because what this happened at toward the end of the whole pandemic deal. I don't know if you heard about that. We had this COVID thing. Maybe you
Oh,
saw it in the
okay.
paper. And like simultaneously, my folks both dealing with dementia. My mom had another bout with cancer, probably her fifth, and my dad had broken his shoulder. So it was just everything all at once. And it just got, worse from there. So my mom's oncologist called me at work because she was calling my house to find out family history. I was raised Jewish, Ashkenazi Jews known for cancer. So she called me up to say that my mom kept hanging up the phone on her. And, what should she do? So I said, well, call. I had a 24/7 nurse living with my parents at the time. I said, just get the nurse on the phone and let her, be the intermediary. 10 minutes later, she calls back. Your mom keeps intercepting the calls. I can't get anything. I said, okay, well, if you're looking for family medical history, let me see how I can help you out. I can give you my family medical history. And the oncologist, like you said, just kind of, well, I don't need yours. After all, you're adopted. I just need your mom and dad. Now, how did that hit me? On paper, you would think that it was a wrecking ball. That being said, with the dementia, my mom had been telling a whole lot of doctors, a whole lot of different stories. So she would tell one doctor that she had X, Y, and Z surgery. She'd tell another doctor she never had any surgery. One visit, she would tell a doctor about all the different symptoms she was having. And then she would tell the nurse on the way out that my dad was the one having those symptoms. So when they told me I was adopted, I chalked it up to, okay, here we go again.
Another mum
It's
story.
dementia talking. Yeah, thanks, thanks for checking in. Bye. And I went home and I got on Facebook and I messaged an aunt. And my reason for doing so was that with the pandemic, a lot of my family had not seen my parents in some time. They just had 5-minute odd conversations with them on the phone. My parents, neither of them were on social media. You really couldn't see what was going on. And at the time, with the dementia that they had, if you were a perfect stranger and you spoke to them for 5 minutes, you would never know anything was wrong. You just, same stories, everything was. So I had a lot of relatives who didn't quite believe me when I said things were taking a turn. So when I messaged this aunt, my intention was to say, you're not going to believe what she said now. This is just another symptom to show you how bad things are getting. So I wrote, mom told a doctor I was adopted. Radio silence. For about a day and a half, I heard nothing back. And then I'm getting ready for work and I bring up Messenger and there's a message that began with, I always wanted to tell you.
Oh my God.
And yeah, you could have knocked me over with a feather. I literally couldn't speak. I had to print out the page and bring it downstairs to my wife to show her what was just told to me. So, yeah, it was a shock. I'm sorry. Yeah, because I was an only child, raised here in Long Island. So, I never would have guessed it.
Obviously, we're going to get deeper into this story, but I've already given away that you were part of the gray market adoption.
Yes.
Can you just quickly explain that, please?
Yeah. So jumping ahead a little bit, my dad was going into hospice at the time all this was happening. So I literally couldn't process anything. It was just happening so fast all at once. And in cleaning out their stuff from their house, I found my adoption papers, which actually is kind of the biggest question that I have to this day that I will never have the answer to, which is, if you weren't going to tell me, why did you save the papers? Why didn't you shred them, burn them, throw them away, whatever? But there they were. And in trying to get some information about my adoption, which I guess would have been considered a closed adoption, there were no names or anything on the papers. At the top of the adoption papers was the name of the legal firm that handled the adoption. And a gentleman's name, Stanley Mickelman. If any of you kids want to look something up and have some fun, check out Stanley Mickelman.
Oh,
Anyway,
please.
I went to find him online to see if perhaps his office was still around or if someone might still have his papers that can give me some information. And instead, what hit me was about a decade worth of articles and exposés. And all about Stanley Mickelman, the most notorious baby broker of the 1970s.
Oh my goodness.
And so before I had Googled it, my wife was reading the papers and she's like, there's just something not right about these. And I guess what she was picking up on was that both the birth mother and the adoptive parents were represented by the same legal firm. So no one was checking what the other side was doing.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, essentially what it meant was that all the facts, everything on the paperwork was fabricated. So I wasn't just starting with no information, I was starting with completely inaccurate, wrong, and fabricated information. For instance, it mentioned in the papers that my birth father died before I was adopted. That wasn't true. But here I am starting my search with this information, looking for a man who passed away from diabetes in New York in 1969. He didn't pass until 1998. So, yeah, so it was a big deal in the late 60s, early 70s. Wasn't quite black market, but it bordered on it. And some of his practices were considered black market, where, the exchange would take place in a parking lot for cash. The way he was running it was he had his own network of doctors and nurses and such at hospitals and medical facilities, where if a girl came in trouble, as they used to say, here was the option that they would kind of push her towards, saying, we have a guy for you. In my case, she was actually told that there was a family who had the same OBGYN who was looking to have a baby, which that actually wasn't true. But there was a financial agreement with all these different people, and they were hooking up Stanley with babies. And it's it you know we could do a couple of hours on Stanley Mickelman, but that was just another example of a plot twist that I didn't see coming, as I was learning my story. That they went through this guy. My aunt, who confirmed my adoption, the story that she initially gave us was that a lawyer had called her up, someone who was dealing with an adoption for a different cousin of hers that fell through a couple of years earlier, and he was looking for the same cousin to say that they found a new baby for them to adopt. And she said, "Well, I don't know where that cousin is, but I have another cousin who would like a baby." So it was like Craigslist. Somehow it just, within a few weeks they had a baby. And they weren't going through the normal channels. There wasn't, the follow-up visits. There wasn't the screening to make sure that you were capable of being a parent. It was, if you got the cash, you're qualified. So
Wow. Okay. So your whole family knew except you. You had grown up loving your mom and dad.
yes.
And then you find out decades into your life that there's been this big, huge family secret and you are the subject of it.
I don't know how they pulled it off. My parents couldn't keep a secret if there was a surprise party or what you were getting for Hanukkah, or I brought home the engagement ring for my wife and was trying to plan something elaborate, but you could just see my mom was getting ready to blow and she was going to spoil. So I literally got engaged like 3 days earlier than I had expected to in front of a local Carvel because I had to, otherwise it wasn't going to be for me to ask. And it's shocking. It is how we went to any family function. A bar mitzvah, a wedding, whatever, risking that, by the end of the night, after people had a couple of drinks in them, that someone didn't accidentally let it slip is amazing. I think when it comes to my parents, that like they couldn't keep any other secrets because they were spending all their bandwidth just keeping this one big one, and they didn't have any space for anything else. That's the only thing I can expect.
Well,
But
having been a young woman through the late 60s, early 70s, I can just see that, like, in those days, oh my God, you never ever said as a young woman that you were pregnant. I mean, they went away right to visit the aunt for 9 months. And then, especially, I guess, if it's been gray market, we won't go to black market, a gray market adoption, that would add to that stigma that your parents just couldn't say it out loud.
No, they right that they were actually there were lines crossed off on the adoption papers about that they couldn't have children of their own. So it was a matter of pride. It was a matter of that generation and not wanting things to be labeled. And I kind of get it. And that's the big thing, and I hope it comes across in when I talk about it or in my book, that I'm not angry with anyone. I'm not surprised. And even There were moments, my wife and I were talking. There were moments when it would have been helpful to know, when we were trying to conceive and having, trouble. And I'm going to doctors, with my family medical history that isn't my family medical history. When, there were a couple of times, but I have absolutely made peace with it because in writing the book and writing the memoir, it is more than clear that it all happened exactly when and exactly how it was supposed to. A few years before I found out, in New York State, you couldn't do DNA tests through the mail. You couldn't get your pre-adoption birth certificate. And a couple of years after I found out, some key people who gave me information passed away. So, like, looking at it, there was a window of time for this to happen, and that's when it happened. So, but and going back to your other point about everyone else knowing, that was my family. They, after it got out that I knew, there were a lot of phone calls and texts and emails apologizing. There was a whole lot of, I don't know if it's guilt or just having the weight taken off their shoulders that, getting in touch with me. And I told, I completely get it. For some, they were saying it wasn't their place. That's great. I mean, it's, you were being, honorable. And the other thing too is, in looking back, that there were people who just suddenly dropped out of our lives with me and my parents. And I came to find out it was folks who told them that they should tell me. If you went to them and said, you should tell Al he's adopted, you were cut out pretty quickly because they assumed that if they weren't going to tell, then these other people, these outsiders, might just spill the beans. So better to make them go away. And, I've been in touch with a couple of those folks. And, it's in a way, it's heartbreaking because those are years that are gone that I could have had a relationship with them. And that's, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off,
No,
but
no, no,
with
no.
the one other thing that was kind of crazy was that I did have one relative after you could just hear in their voice, they're so relieved, but they wanted to tell me what they said was because they knew I was adopted, they always wanted to give me a little bit more love. And I get where they were coming from, and I understand, like it's from a loving place, but man, it's like it hit me that every one of my relationships with all these people was, started with a secret. And it wasn't just Al's coming over, it's Al, Lucy, and Shelley's adopted boy is coming over. Let's make sure we don't let on that we know something.
It goes back to that whole little phrase that you're keeping up appearances. You know, like everybody was doing what they felt they needed to do at the time and given the times. You know, so yeah, I'm sure looking back, you either have to resolve that or it'll drive you crazy. So, yeah. Now, your parents, both into dementia, that weird journey. I've got a career in elder care and dementia care, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Was there ever a moment when you thought, crap, I may never fully know the story?
Only 8 or 9 times an hour, but other than that, it was fine. From right from the get-go. I mean, like I said, at every stage there was something else going. Yeah, you're never going to know this. From the time that I found out, and when I first, approached my mom with it to say, your doctor told me I'm adopted. She admitted it, and then went on to, complain about her nurse. I went, okay. And then the second time I went to her and said, hey, can we talk about this adoption thing? And she said, what adoption thing? You're not adopted. That's a lie. And that was the last time I brought it up with her. And with my dad, he passed away about 3 weeks after I found out, and I never told him I knew. I said, if he was this long, there's no reason for me to. So my background, I was a comedian here on Long Island. And after that, Well, actually, during that, I taught improvisational comedy as well at clubs in Hofstra University and a few other places. And one of the things that I teach is trying to get that voice in the back of your head to be quiet. The one that tells you you're not smart enough, you're not funny enough, you're not good enough. That whole kind of, I don't know, whether it's a parent who told you or a guidance counselor or an ex, someone said something and it's there. So one of the first things I teach people is to give them that self-esteem and that self-confidence. And boy, did that voice come screaming back in a way I never expected, just going, "You're never going to know." And just, you don't deserve, waiting for that other shoe to drop, just laying in bed and going, "You don't know your parents' names." And, another time just saying, "The only living person who's a blood relative that you know of is in the other room. It's your son, and that's it." So that was tough. That was tough to deal with. But I won't go too deep into it, but at every turn there was, "You're not going to find out," right up to getting my birth mom's name, Mary Smith, the most common name on the planet. All I had to go on was Mary Smith and a yearbook picture from a school that closed 26 years ago. That was it. And the story of piecing it together, the whole idea, I don't remember who said it, about how when you're living your life forward, it doesn't make any sense. But when you look back, you go, "Okay, that's why this person, and that's why that, and okay, and that's why." Someone reviewed my book and said it was almost like a rom-com of how things had to be put into place for, serendipity to happen. And that was it. And thank God I had my wife and son here with me, because there were so many times that I just said, "Enough, I'm exhausted. I'm physically exhausted. I'm mentally exhausted. Emotionally, I'm shot. I can't do this." And they, kept helping me push on and kept me going. So yeah, so at just about every turn, I really thought it's not going to happen. And every time something surprising happened, someone around me that I would share it with would say, "Oh, you got to write a book." And I kept saying, "Well, unless I find her, I can't write a book." Even the very first person, I did Ancestry.com and I did 23andMe and those. And the very first person that I found, other than, maybe 1,000 fifth cousins. Man, I've never, as far as the eye can see, I have fifth cousins. We found one cousin that my wife looked at and said, "Based on her age and the percentage of DNA match, I think this might be an aunt." And it turns out it was. But she hadn't logged into Ancestry in well over a year. So I said, "That's not going to work." So I found her through Facebook. I found her and I found her daughter. And when you message someone on Facebook who you're not connected to, who you're not friends with, it's like dropping a Lego, into a dark gymnasium and hoping someone steps on it. And they did, which I went, "Oh, breakthrough." And I contacted her daughter and I said, and I was being cryptic. I didn't want to scare anyone off because I don't know who knows what. So I said, "Hey, Ancestry says we might be related. I might have a question or two if you think your mom could." And she was so excited. "Oh, this is going to be great. I'm sure she'll be love to meet you." Great. And 3 days later, got a message back saying, "Yeah, sorry, she doesn't want to connect." And I said, "Oh, so this is how it's going to be." And but little did I know, now that I look back, I know, just having her name was enough. Because finding out, doing a little bit of a search, my sister-in-law found an obituary for her brother, who turns out to be my birth dad. And let me see. I'm just gonna, because for me to tell you versus me showing you, it's kind of mind-blowing. She finds this obituary for a name, for a gentleman named Paul Hudgens. And let's see if you could see this. So the picture there is a picture of my birth dad, Paul Hudgens, next to a picture of my son, Nick.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, we kind of went, oh, I guess that's my birth dad.
It's funny because as I was looking at the picture, I kept on glancing my eyes up to you, and I'm going, well, and then you said your son, and I went, oh my God.
But it's my
Yeah.
son. Yeah. So that was kind of what that was like the big moment. And his obituary mentioned that he had a daughter named Molly. So I had a half daughter, a half sister out there. And just the best thing in the world.
Okay, I'm going to go sideways for a minute here.
Please, please.
Some time ago on this podcast, and this may be one of those questions that you say, move on, Agnes, I
Sure.
spoke with Peter Bonney about assisted reproductive technology and the complicated ethics around donor conception, which is the same, only different. One of the ideas that stayed with me was something he called genealogical bewilderment, the feeling of moving through life without a full map of where you come from. Now, one of the concerns he raised was something that I had never thought about, was the possibility that someone could unknowingly cross paths or even form relationships with biological relatives they didn't know existed. Did that ever enter your mind?
Luckily, no. I mean, it crossed my mind. But luckily, Paul is from Missoula, Montana, where I have never
People
found
travel.
myself. People do travel. And in fact, Molly, my half sister, I call her my sister. I don't say half sister. It's like saying, you had pizza last night. I didn't have 1/8 of a pizza. I had pizza. So she's my sister. She lives in Chicago. So that was the closest. But yeah, that thought, it's a good one. And it's one, there's no such thing as closed adoption anymore. And with ancestry, with all these different things, no. So everyone's gonna find out whatever the secret is, whether they knew it or not. They're gonna find out. But no. So I did ask the question just in case I might have seen or known someone. The closest to it that I've gotten was that back in the late 90s, I used to. Here's three words you don't hear often together: pro wrestling journalist. I was a pro wrestling journalist in the late 90s, and I was a pretty popular one. And it turns out that
Oh, sorry,
my
you just
half.
said pro wrestling, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
I heard progressling or something.
Oh,
So
I'm sorry.
I just
Let
want to
me
clarify for
allow me to
the
art allow me to
listeners.
articulate.
Pro wrestling.
I was a professional wrestling journalist. Even people who do hear it correctly don't think they heard it correctly. But I was pretty popular, and it turns out that my half sister's boyfriend at the time was a big fan. So that's kind of the closest I've gotten to crossing paths with anybody. But other than that, no.
Okay. So what did your half sister do when, I mean, I'm only going to call her half sister once more time. Your
That's
half
fine.
sister do when she realized that she had a half brother out there, because she probably would not have known that either.
Well, that's the funny thing. She knew about me, and she had been looking for me for 20 years. Her mom told her about me on their way home from college. She was driving back from California to Montana after she graduated, and my birth dad had passed away. And her mom told her, "You have a half brother out there." And she started the journey. She was looking for me for 20 years. And so, kind of a similar situation. After I read the obituary and saw her name, I went back onto Facebook and I saw the picture, and I emailed my wife. I said, "I think this might be my sister." But I wasn't doing the messenger thing anymore. This time I got her address in Chicago, and I sat down and handwrote a letter to her. And it was maybe 7 or 8 days later, I got an email back. And again, I was being very cryptic. "I think we might be related." And like the first line is like, "We're not just related, you're my brother, you dope. And it was amazing. I don't think I finished the email before I had her on the phone, and it was amazing. It was absolutely, it was, I always wanted to have a brother or sister, and
You got
now
me
I got
tearing
one.
up here. What a great story. Oh my God. Yeah.
She's the best.
Yeah.
Absolute
Win-win.
best.
Like win-win does not always happen.
No, and you know, that's what I tell folks, because in writing the book, people go, oh, you're going to give people hope, and I hope it does. I hope maybe they'll pick up an idea or something if they're going through the same thing. But I'm very realistic with how lucky I got. And I say to folks that it's almost like when someone wins a Grammy and they get up there in front of the microphone and see, dreams do come true. Like, no, your dreams came true. There's four people still in their seats who had that same dream. Not so much. So yeah, it could have gone better. But and I should mention that when we first touched base with that first phone call, she let me know that I had a new niece on the way, and a few months later, little Rosa was in my life. So yeah, it just the at that point, I literally said, I'm like, if I never find Mary Smith, I am so far ahead of the game, I'm okay, because it really, the odds were not looking great for finding my Mary Smith. A lot of Mary Smiths out there, but finding mine was the trick.
Okay, so how did you find your Mary Smith?
So, my Mary Smith, as they say, we knew that she was first, my aunt gave me the clue that she was a performer or maybe a dancer of some kind in New York. And when you're talking about a performer or dancer of some kind in New York, that could mean, yes, a great many things. So that
I
was a
like
lot
her
to go on.
already.
Oh man, she's the best. And then narrowing it down a little bit more, Molly's mom, Roz, let me know that she was an amazing folk singer. She's like, oh, your incredible voice. What a guitar player. She's really something else.
Did
And I
Roz and
said,
Mary know each other
yes.
back in the day?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, because that was the big mystery for me, because according to Paul's obituary, it said that he and Roz were married in 1969, and that's when I was born. So immediately we're going, wait a second, Roz's life wasn't lining up with being my mom, so where did I come from? So in reaching out to Roz and Molly, I was terrified that Paul, the bachelor
Dot,
party or
dot, dot.
so, wasn't the case. As it turns out, Paul and Mary met a few years earlier in 67 at a church band camp. This one time at band camp, they met at a music band camp and fell for each other and writing letters and whatnot. And then Mary became a singer, entertainer, folk singer. And one of the places that she went to was the University of Montana in Missoula. And in 1969, in the spring, she went and visited Paul. And
They were
I were
excited to see each
conceived.
other.
Yeah, a little bit. So as the story goes, Roz had told me that Paul didn't know about me. Roz told me that Mary called Paul on Christmas Eve in Montana to say that she had a baby, but it's taken care of. He's up for adoption, and that was it. And that was all Paul knew, according to Roz. According to Mary later on, Paul knew the day that Mary knew. And I believe both of them. The only person who knows the truth is no longer with us, so it really doesn't matter. But that being said, okay, so. So we find out from Roz that Mary was a great folk singer, and we find out that she had a beautiful voice and whatnot. So I, at this time, I was working with search angels to help me find, I was so new at all of this, and these folks were amazing at what they could find. And I have a niece named Caitlin, here in New York, who is a fantastic singer and performer, and she's always doing theater. On Long Island, so there's always articles and newspaper. So my wife said to me, you have to tell these search angels to maybe see if there was anything to, her performing, because if she was good enough to be playing colleges, and touring and like that, she had to be doing stuff elsewhere. And one of my search angels got in touch with me, and she said, "I just found this article, and it was from Montana, talking about a local winner of a contest called Sound of Youth. And Sound of Youth, as it turns out, was kind of like American Idol. They were having city, state, regional, and finals. And the finals were going to be in New York, hosted by Duke Ellington, carried on television across the country. So, cutting to the chase, Mary won the whole thing. Mary won the local, the regional, the state, and the whole country.
But it started,
And
I got
be
to interrupt. Sorry, I got to interrupt here
please,
because, so it
please.
started in Montana, correct?
Well, it started, I'm sorry,
Like the
when she
competition.
won, it started across the country. It started in every state. So she, not Montana, she won she won in Michigan. Mary was originally, she was born in Chicago, and then her family moved to Michigan. She was right outside of Flint. So
Oh.
she won in the Flint area, and then she won the whole Michigan one, and then she won the next regional, and then she won the whole
You
finals.
just blew my romantic story right out of the water. I watched your video here where the youth groups and the best fella, and then Mary wins best female singer, and then the group wins. I scanned through until I could just see Mary. She starts singing, what was the Elvis song? It went Before It's Time for You to Go or something. And I'm looking at her going, she's singing to Al's dad. The look in her eye, she's making eye contact with someone. She is in love, or she looks like she's in love. And I just went, oh. And I wasn't even going to say anything until afterwards, but you've just blown the story out of the water anyways.
That was in no that was in November of 1968. So yeah, that's who she was singing to.
Oh, okay, so I was right. Oh, all right. See, women know these things. Women know these
Knows.
things.
I don't, it's not for me to question your spider sense. I know.
Okay, I want to get back into like the whatevers. You're on the stage cracking jokes and making people laugh. She was on the stage with her beautiful voice. Is that genetics?
Completely. Yeah, when it comes to nature versus nurture, it's nature by a mile. And that was one of the things that people go, "How did you not know?" And I, as an only child, you just kind of figure, "Oh, yeah, my parents don't necessarily like the same stuff I like. Maybe it's generational, But yeah, they didn't get the comedy thing. I've been a drummer for a really, really good majority chunk of my life. And they just kind of, went along with it fine. And my life makes so much sense in finding out about Mary and Paul and the conversations that I have with Mary. There were so many, like, just lining up moments, so many parallels between her music and my comedy. For me, it would have been music. It would have been music probably if I played guitar, but because I played drums, I had to get there an hour before everyone and unpack and pack everything up and break everything down. And then someone went, "If you tell jokes, you just show up. They got a microphone there for you, brick wall, you do your thing." I'm like, "Great, because you could play drums in your basement and no one will think you're weird, but if you sit down there telling jokes all by yourself, they'll lock you up." So that was my choice. It's but yeah, in reading when we got that article about Mary and Sound of Youth, and I started doing Google search for her and newspapers.com, and seeing all these interviews with her and how she worked the crowd, I'm like, "Yeah, of course this is my mom. It's crazy." And I'll jump ahead and we can jump back, but One of the first really long phone conversations I had with Mary, see, spoiler, I find her.
I read
I
that on
tell
this
people,
page.
I tell people that like right out of the gate. I'm like, just saying, because in the book, there are moments that get pretty grim. It's like, no, it's all good. I find her. So, spoiler. But one of the first phone calls I had with her that we spoke for a while, and we were comparing road stories about, our favorite shows
Oh my
and
God, yeah.
what a great audience this was, and how sometimes it just clicks, and it's like magic just happens. I got done with the call, and my wife heard some of it, and she goes, "You know what's amazing?" She goes, "When you were talking about like your favorite shows, you never asked each other how much you got paid, because that was always the first question from my parents. That was how they kind of judge stuff. It wasn't how fulfilled, it wasn't how satisfied or what a good night it was, or artistically how I felt. It was, oh, so how much did you get paid? What was the check at the end of the night? How was that?" And I just kind of, my dad was a Wall Street guy. I totally get it, but we were, playing a game, and they were the only ones who had the rules. I didn't know, and there was never going to be a time when they were going to be on the same page about that stuff. And I was okay with it. I didn't quite understand it, and it was kind of, sad for me that I couldn't make them proud of that stuff in the same way. If I had a good payday, they were proud. Until. I should say, until after my dad passed away and we were cleaning out the house, and I found a big stack of articles and pictures of me on stage and interviews that I had done. And I thought, why couldn't he have shared this with me?
But you
Man,
have it
but
now.
I have it now. Yeah, exactly.
Just one little comment from a personal angle is
Please.
I dated the drummer in the band, so
I'm sorry.
for a long time, so I couldn't tell you how many times I set the kit or helped set the kit up, knocked the kit
Yeah.
down, loaded the truck.
I don't have to tell
I
you.
knew. Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
I want to go to a few questions now that sort of include our audience.
Sure.
Because many of our listeners are women in midlife or beyond. We often talk, and part of the theme of what I'm doing is how our identities continue evolving. But when you discover something that profound about yourself later in life, does it make you feel like a different person, or does it just add a chapter to the story?
I'm going to say I'm a little bit unique in that it mostly added. And I only say that because in reading online, there were different NPE and LDA, late discovery adoptee groups that I had joined just to get kind of, information and what my next steps were. And there were so many stories from people whose identities were blown up. People who, I look at friends of mine who, for instance, St. Patrick's Day is coming up, that they are so Irish that St. Patrick's Day is like Christmas 2.0, and they can't wait. And then for someone like that to find out they're not Irish, that's got to be devastating. I didn't have that. I grew up believing I was 75% Russian and 25% English. I had three grandparents from Russia, I had one from England. But that was never really part of my identity. We didn't celebrate Russian culture. There were no Russian flags. There were no Russian, holidays, nothing. So that was never a big part of my identity. Being Jewish, I grew up in a neighborhood. I was one of two Jewish kids in my school. Me and Amy Eisenberg. Amy, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to bail on you. But after I turned 13 and was bar mitzvahed, I never went back. My parents were not terribly religious, so that one was not a big deal for me. Which leaves me being a dad and husband. That hasn't changed. Me being a comedian and teacher, that was taken away by COVID, so that had nothing to do with the adoption. So, I'm a lot more fortunate than some of these other stories that I read, who who they were really, really entrenched with. And no matter how much you tell them nothing's really changed, you're still the same person. There's a wound there. And I feel bad for those folks. But it was all about addition for me. And trying to relate that to family too was tricky, because again, I don't know if they felt guilty for not telling me, or they thought that I was going to be angry with them or cut them out of my family. They are still my cousins. They still grew up with me. They are still. So it was all about addition. And I think enough time has passed that they realize it's like, no, I'm still out. I'm still with you. Even though, I keep finding little anecdotes and stories about my life that, kind of freak me out a little bit. But for the most part, we're like, so I mentioned I'm Jewish. I was bar mitzvahed on December 3rd, 1982, here on Long Island, and I come to find out that after I was born, the nurses named me because Mary, had me. I had jaundice, so I had to stay in NICU for a few days. So I was named Christian Smith. I don't think the rabbis at the Wantage Jewish Center realized they were bar mitzvahing Christian Smith, but they were. So getting back to the question you asked me a year and a half ago, it's been about addition more or less. I've come back around to who I was, and it took a while. It definitely, even when it was happening, people asked me, how are you doing? Oh, I'm doing great. I'm doing okay. And I really wasn't, but as you're going through it, you don't quite realize until you look back and go, ooh, I was a mess. But doing much, much better.
The other question I was going to ask is, some listeners might be hearing this story from a very personal place, and I touched on this when I contacted you on Podmatch. There may be women listening who placed a child for adoption 50, even 60 years ago, who grew up in, or they grew up in families where things were never talked about. What do you want those women to understand about secrets, long kept, really impactful secrets?
It's so tough. It was tough for me, because I kept coming at this from the fact that, number one, I was in my 50s. I think it's very different when someone who's 20 years old comes knocking at your door saying, I think I'm your kid, what do they want? As opposed to someone who has a family who just, I'd like to know, where I come from and get to meet, the person that brought me into this world. There was never a thought of you abandon me, or, I demand answers. So that's very different. But like I said near the beginning, man, there is no such thing as closed adoption anymore. And the number of people who get these, DNA kits as a goof, for Christmas. My wife did one years ago. She asked me to do it with her, but I said, well, I know everything. What's to know? 75% Russian, 25% English. I'm an only child. I don't need to know nothing. But my wife did it because one of her cousins did it, and it was so cool to find out, oh, hey, they are related to Catherine the Great. So people do that with that expectation. It's like, hey, you're related to Henry the Sixth, and your dad's not your dad. Oh, well, didn't see that coming. There are no surprises anymore. The other thing too, with me finding out and with me looking for Mary, the way when I was looking for Molly, the last thing I wanted to do was drop a bomb in the middle of anyone's life. I didn't want to contact this girl who didn't know I was out there. And at the time, I'm thinking, Paul may have had a relationship on the side of his marriage, and hey, your late dad cheated on your mom. I didn't want to do that. So thank God everything lined up the way it did, that
everyone could be honest with everyone else, and everyone knew what was going on. And it came from a healthy place, and everyone was happy and excited. Mary didn't have any other children. I was it. So it wasn't like, there were five other siblings, waiting to inherit the Mary Smith fortune, and find out that, who's this guy? It all worked out. And for me, it worked out exactly how it was supposed to. And there are so many heartbreaking stories out there of people finding out and not quite working out the way, whether the people didn't want to reconnect or once they reconnect, it wasn't as good as what it was in their dreams and hopes, and that's kind of heartbreaking. So, but yeah, from my
What
own personal experience, from my own personal experience, it couldn't have happened earlier. As much as I wish I could have known Molly and gone trick-or-treating with her when she was little, or threatened to beat up the kid who took her to prom if he touched her. I realized that it would never have worked out that way. I wouldn't have found her, and if anything, I would have gotten frustrated and never looked now, and I would have, went on with my life without knowing.
That's a really good point. That, like, nowadays, or even in the last 10 years, probably, that whole tracking is easier than it would have been 35, 40 years ago.
The technology just wasn't there. So for all the people who because I for every one person that had a closed adoption, there's another five who might not know that they're not the biological parent to begin with. And then there are folks, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a great documentary by John Boehm called Filling in the Blanks, where he had a very similar story to mine. He's around the same age as I am. But it just turns out that his mom is his mom, but she went to a fertility doctor. So his dad knew, but when it took place in the late 60s, they could never have imagined that Ancestry.com would be a thing. So here they are in their late 80s, and he's going to visit them in Florida. And they're at a retirement facility there, and they're sitting around having dinner, and some people on the other side of the table start talking about doing DNA, and he says, "Oh, that might be interesting." And the father slams on the table, "Don't you dare do that! And if you do, it better be after I'm dead." It's like, "Oh, well, what better way to tell someone to go and do it immediately?" And he found out his truth, and that documentary really helped me out. It really helped me out to understand just the mentality, especially of dads at that time, the pride. And that was one of the things my wife's like, you never thought to ask your mom why there were no pictures of her pregnant with you? And I'm like, I'm a boy. What do I know? Had I suspected something, maybe I would have looked. I didn't. So.
Well, especially his first kid, it's the other kids there's never any pictures of.
Right. What
I'm
did
gonna
I
ask you,
know?
the impossible question now. If the
Sure.
truth had never come out about your adoption, if the doctor had never made that comment,
Yeah.
what
I would have gone on with my life very happily with my wife and son, and that would have been great. They're amazing people, and I couldn't be prouder of my kid. He's amazing. He just graduated from college early,
Oh my goodness.
and my wife is wonderful, and she's writing a cozy mystery of her own, so we can battle it out on the bestsellers list, and that would have been great. The fact that I understand my life better is amazing, and having Mary in my life and having Molly in my life is such a blessing. I can't tell you how grateful I am to the dozen or so people who helped me out on this journey who didn't have to. It's crazy, like how it lined up with that someone happened to see something that I posted online and got in touch with me. It's a small miracle. It was absolutely supposed to happen. So I can't. But if it hadn't happened, then, I wouldn't have gotten to meet you. So
There
right
you go.
there's a small
Okay,
tragedy.
okay. Oh, what schmoozer. Oh my goodness. Okay. I'm going to ask you one more question, and as I say, sometimes I know you may not want to go there. What was Mary's reaction when she laid eyes on you?
Oh boy, that was magic. She never expected it. She had the same reaction that Molly did, which was that they both thought I knew and just wasn't looking. As Molly said to me, she goes, she goes, I just thought you didn't want to be found. And I said, well, I didn't know I was lost. So there were different moments with Mary that just like every time I thought, well, this is the best thing in the world, there would be one that came after that went, well, this is the best thing in the world. I found her, another spoiler from the book. The only reason I found Mary, there was a point where I knew who she was and I was finding all these articles about her. And, as I say, I had articles where I couldn't have memories. I had all these really interesting pieces and reviews of her music and stuff. And I got to know this 19-year-old girl really, really well. So it was kind of scary to meet the flesh and blood real life person. And getting the first email from her was crazy. I shouldn't have found her. There's no other way to put it. I was searching for more articles about her, and I was typing in the search terms Mary Smith, Sound of Youth, Mary Smith, folk singer, Mary Smith, coffee house, circuit. That's what she was doing in New York. She was folk singer, and I put in the phrase Mary Smith guitar, and God bless Google Cachet, because this beautiful acoustic guitar, this Martin guitar, pops up on my screen, and right next to it pops up a picture of Mary standing in front of the Bitter End in New York in 1971. And it's her guitar. But the thing was, when I clicked on to go to the website that it was on, it wasn't on the site anymore. It turns out the guitar had actually been sold a year prior. So I technically should not have seen that picture. The website had deleted it, but for whatever reason, Google Cachet had kept it. So I immediately email the website that it was on. And I said, hey, I see this Mary Smith Martin guitar. I think you sold it, but do you happen to have any articles or any more pictures of Mary? I see the one picture you have, or do you have any more pictures? And this gentleman named Anthony Wernicke emails me back. And I didn't notice, but the website didn't have a .com. It had a .UK address. It was in England. And Anthony gets back and goes, oh, yeah, sure. Mary's guitar. I know Mary. What would you like to know?
Oh
Not
my goodness.
I knew Mary. I know Mary. And
Did
so.
your world just stop right there?
Yeah, so I couldn't type fast enough. I think I don't think I used spaces or verbs, but I just typed out this email to him, just laying out the whole story like a psychopath. And he said to me, he goes, I will reach out to Mary because this could be something really special. I don't know if she's expecting to hear from you or wants to. I can't promise anything. He was like the, and it turns out that he used to live maybe 5 miles from me on Long Island. He moved
Jeez.
to England.
That he wasn't
So
Mary's
there's your
partner, though,
guy.
was he?
No.
Oh,
No,
okay,
it
because I'm going
turns
to say
out
that might be a little bit of a
that'd been
ah.
weird. So he reached out for Mary on my behalf, and it took her about a week, and then she emailed me. And that was kind of amazing. And I'm sure that she and her husband had a lot of questions because, who is this psychopath? This Nigerian prince who's emailing me. And when we had our first Zoom call, it was, I can't describe, the first thing out of my mouth to say, I said, I don't know you, but I love you. You gave me life. My parents gave me a life, and we kind of just took it from there. And then I flew out to England about 3 months later, and getting off the train and meeting her was just, the best. It's my mom. It was absolutely incredible. And her husband was so cool with everything. He had heard about me, but again, she, like Molly, was like, okay, I had a son and he's out there and he must have a happy life and doesn't want to connect. So that was amazing. And then a year later, I flew her out to New York to meet everyone, and getting to see her, hug my son. It's like, she's not just getting me,
Yeah,
it's a whole
I'm gonna
package.
say
So,
exactly that. In one day, she gets a son and a grandson and a daughter-in-law.
son, grandson, yeah. So it was, and she took me around. We went to the city, and it was really cool. She used to work at this Italian restaurant called Arturo's in the village, and they still have her picture up
Oh my
behind the
goodness.
bar. And but to look at it, you would never know it was taken in 1971. It looks like it was taken last week. And they say customers sit at the bar and stare at it all day long. It's like, she's a grandmother. You little pervert. What's wrong with you?
See, she's so pretty.
Yeah. Oh. So it's been a dream. It's been absolutely the best. And then when I told her I wanted to write the book, like I didn't have a bigger fan. She's like, yeah, let's give some people some hope and a story with a happy ending, So the best.
Okay, I'm just looking at the clock, unfortunately. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want those mid-age women listeners to think about after listening to this conversation and your story?
It's never too late. Whatever the truth, whatever your journey is, finding things out. I'm so lucky that I had a support system the way I did, whether it was the people online or especially the people under the same roof as me. There's an old cartoon of a guy digging for treasure, and you see the treasure here, and he's a couple of inches, and he just stops. And that
Five
would have been
inches from
me.
gold.
Yep, that would have been me if not for them. Just saying, just a little bit further, just a little bit further. You got this. And man, I'm so fortunate and so appreciative. And there are folks out there online willing to help. And I'm certainly one of them. So if anyone needs a point in the right direction, they could reach out to me and I'll be happy to help out.
Okay, so the book is called Finding Mary Smith. You are Al Isaacs, and we
Yes.
all know how to spell Isaacs. Sorry, listeners,
Sure.
that just has something to do with what we were talking about before I clicked record. Okay, is there anything else we need to know about your book?
No,
You've
it's
given away the
available.
spoiler now, so. But the process, the story, yeah.
You know what? As much as I've given away, there is so much more.
Oh yeah,
There
no, I just
really
meant that
is.
you've only given away
Yeah.
that you actually found
Oh,
Mary
that
Smith.
I actually find her.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that would be a
Because
horrible, horrible twist.
when I was actually researching you, I'm going like, where does it end? Like the and it was only when I see this massive great thing on my other monitor here, the cover of the book, and the miracle reunion with my mom, and I went, oh, okay, good. So
Well, just a small preface, PS, that's the thing about writing memoirs, is you never quite know where to end it. I kind of had an idea where to begin the thing, but stuff kept happening. Like, oh, that I got to put that in. That's so cool, and that's so cool. I'll leave that surprise in the book.
That's great. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
www.alisaacs, that's alisaacs.com, or find me on Facebook, or say my name three times into the mirror in the bathroom, and I will appear.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to
Creepy.
test that. I'm not going to test that. So the book's
Yeah,
available on your website. I was
Yes.
going to ask now your social. You just mentioned social. Is that Al the
Yeah.
biographer or Al the comedian? Or both?
Boy, all the above, because I'll tell you what, I've had like friends from high school look me up and go, "What have you been doing with your life?" Because there's like comedians and professional wrestlers and like people from England. They're like, just what a collage of, yeah.
Keeps life
Yeah, so
interesting.
yes.
Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Absolutely.
None of our conversations so far has been personal.
Sure.
You're a comedian by choice. You
Yes, ma'am.
teach the art form. Aside from this story, does the innate ability to create humor help you deal with, and I'm going to use air quotes, stuff, aka life?
A 1,000,000%. Yes.
Okay.
And that's like at the very beginning of the book, I almost apologize to readers. I'm like, there are some places I'm making jokes that you probably wouldn't make jokes, but for anyone who's gone through anything, you know, any trauma of any kind, if you don't laugh, you know, you can't function. So yeah, it helped me a great deal. I only wish that a lot of this wasn't happening when COVID was happening, because there were a lot of times where I really could have used some stage time to just go up and vent and get it out there. But
Purge.
the funny thing is, yeah, the kind of comedy that I do was improv. So, you know, your whose line is it anyway type stuff. So ironically, it's like here I am on stage making believe I'm different people, and turns out my folks were doing that for 50 years. So I guess that I inherited from them. But yeah, it to be able to look at things from different angles and see the humor and stuff, yeah, it's a lifesaver.
Interestingly, a couple of years ago, I interviewed a young woman who was a comedian, and she had some issues, shall we say, life issues, with
Sure.
her own reproductive ability. And after getting over the bad, sad, whatever parts of that,
Yeah.
she took that into her sets on stage, and
Yeah.
she had all sorts of women coming up to her later going like, and just in tears going like, oh my God, you just made us feel so much better about our situation, and you know,
Yeah.
thank you for doing that, thank you for giving it the light of day, you know,
Yeah.
because it's secrets that people hold, and as soon as you can take the covers off, it's just such a huge relief.
No question. No question about it. And those were, you know, a lot of the comedians that I follow or friends with, that had some success with it. You know, there's a good piece of themselves up there. You know, and it helps you, and it helps the audience.
Okay, your website link is in the show notes, and all of the links, social, the book, everything will be on your page at our website. Listeners, many of us reach midlife thinking we know the story of our lives, and then something unexpected arrives and changes how we see everything. And this is one of those conversations that touches on identity, family history, the stories we carry, and where we come from. If today's episode resonated with you, or if you have your own story about adoption, family secrets, or discovering something unexpected about your past, I would really like to hear from you. Share your thoughts in the comments. And interestingly, every once in a while, when I'm doing this outro and I suggest comments, I say that this is one of the few times when if you need to put a pseudonym in, feel free to do that. And the website link or the email address never shows. If someone came to mind while you were listening today, a friend, a sibling, someone in your family who might appreciate this conversation, please consider sharing the episode with them. Stories like this often open doors to conversations we didn't know we needed. If you enjoy thoughtful conversations about life's twists and turns after midlife, I love the fact you used the word plot twist earlier. I invite you to follow the Boomer Woman's podcast so you don't miss future episodes. If you want to listen early, I release each episode on Substack on Wednesday evening before it goes live everywhere else. Al Isaacs, thank you for being my guest today, sharing such a personal journey, honesty, generosity, and reminding us that even when the truth arrives later in life, it can still help us understand ourselves in ways we never expected.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great rest of the week.